In the last 8 days, I have experienced the death of 6 people that I know, and many of them have been people that significantly impacted the formation of my life. In addition, I have been walking with many of you, with our member and friend Donovan Walling, as he approaches his death caused by a horrible cancer. He has moved, you might have seen in the bulletin, he's moved to hospice house door. I stopped by, I gotta get rid of this somewhere, it's bothering me. I stopped by his house on Thursday before the move to hospice house. I wanted very much to be supportive of Sam, who had to make the decision, and also to visit Donovan in his home one last time. And as I went to leave, Donovan grabbed my hand and with surprising strength did not let go. It was both a lovely moment and one in which I felt honestly just an abject failure. I cannot keep him from having to die. To leave not only his home, moment of his holding on to me how much I believe in life after death from this life. And I leaned back over his body that is ever so slowly wasting away, and I kissed him again and wished him a good journey into death and beyond. Good life, a complete life, needs to risk being around dying and death. Our children, our grandchildren, the children of our friends need to be around death, surrounded with good information and the warm, loving embrace that promises them security. And rebuild our lives in the face of the reality of death, because they will also have to do this. It is so much to be preferred that our kids and our souls be used to death rather than just shockingly surprised by it. It was just a month and a couple days ago that our friend Joe Dussard died suddenly in a car crash at age 28. It's not just old folks who die. Living with death and around the most sincerely grieving ones does not make us live less. Being with death, whether physical or psychological, in addition to the grief, we want to live life while it's still ours. Wesley Allen claims, and I quote, "Our beautiful, majestic, joyous Easter services in churches around the world are only an effort to give expression to the lived reality of encountering the presence of God in life rising up and beginning again, not just this one morning, but every morning of our lives," end quote. In every experience of death leading to new life, in every experience of healing and grace and forgiveness and new hope, that is when we experience resurrection and relationships repaired and renewed, churches brought back from the brink of closing to new and vibrant ministry, health restored after suffering an illness, delight in life after long grief. The wonderful writer Annie Lamott has shared her life story with honesty and deep spirituality, including her struggle with alcohol abuse and depression. And she says, "I am a broken and a resurrected person," end quote. So many of us would have to say the same. In many dreams and experience new life, we see and hear and touch the resurrection of the God who will not allow death to remain. We see and we believe. Resurrection isn't something that only happened a long time ago, something that we simply commemorate on Easter. In our day-to-day lives, as the church in ministry, we put our hands on the wounds of this broken world, just like Thomas did. Resurrection, says the great 14th century, all shall be well. All shall be well, and all manner of... That's a tough one. William Sloan Coffin, a great prophet of the United Church of Christ, once said, and I quote, "As I see it, the primary religious task of these days is to try to think straight. He says you can't think straight with a heart full of fear, for fear seeks safety, not truth. He says if your heart's a stone, you can't have decent thoughts, either about personal relations or about international ones. He goes on to say, a heart full of love, on the other hand, has a limbering effect on the mind, end quote. Hide from the possibilities of resurrection in our lives and in the world. Those disciples, described in the reading from the Gospel according to John, cowered in fear behind closed doors when good news was waiting just outside the door. Good news came into them anyway, even in their fear, and made their minds limber. They were seeking safety, and the truth came instead. Is it fear that makes us hide from the suffering of the world? Coffin once warned that we run like Pilate because power is hard-hearted. And yet he said we belong to one another. According to the vision of the religious community, the saving vision, the ancient prophetic vision of human unity, all of God's children on the earth. As Alan says, we can't keep the gift to ourselves. The Spirit was given to us because we are connected to and responsible for one another, all the one another's. I don't know if you've seen it, but in the film Boycott, about the 1955 Montgomery bus, which Martin Luther King Jr. and the local civil rights leader E.D. Nixon are standing outside of Nixon's house as it burns to the ground one night. Nixon knows that the white supremacists are behind the arson, and he also seems to know that they're going to go unpunished. Nothing's going to come out of that. And adding fuel to the fire, the fire department has arrived at the burning house, but the white firefighters simply elect to lean against their trucks and look on as the fire continues to burn. King arrives, and he stands beside Nixon, both of them helpless as the house goes up in flames. And Nixon asks King, nonviolence at moments like these, and should we, as he and his family are physically threatened and attacked by the powers that are opposing what they're doing? And King doesn't answer him directly. Instead, speaking slowly as though it pains him to do so, he quotes from the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 10, verse 39. You might want to look it up later. He said, "But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed. But we belong to those who have faith and are saved." I think Dr. King is often remembered as a great leader of courage. I find it's worth remembering that he was also truly a man of great faith, that he took his faith seriously. He was not a perfect man, but he took his faith seriously. And its role in the struggle for civil rights for African Americans, his faith is really kind of what pushed him through. King worked for civil rights because he believed that the rights and privileges of Americans should be actually applied to all Americans. That's all he was doing. But also because he believed in upholding the God-given dignity of blacks in America, even if whites and their accompanying power structure refused to acknowledge it. He hoped for a day when racism in the world would be safe for African Americans, safe for the poor, safe for everyone. I don't know about you, but these last few years have felt like a reliving of the history of American racism and global discrimination in some twisted, condensed version. It's not that long ago that Trayvon Martin was killed by a neighbor who saw himself as the law. Michael Brown, then, by a police officer who saw himself as a victim. Both shooters went free without convictions, as fatal shootings of African Americans and other minorities continue. People died in their communities, died trying to get out, as many of us just watched on television. the way we watch Rwanda and Bosnia and so on. The Pulse shooting targeted the club's LGBTQ clients. The election rhetoric targeted women, Muslims, people of color, and others. On me, I feel it in my body, in my soul. I just feel this sadness, a pain, a loss, it's like a cut into sacred places that I had hoped had healed over. And I hear it in the words of my neighbors, peoplessness, fear, anger. Those of us who count ourselves as people of faith, we have the challenge of maintaining this identity while also maintaining all of these feelings. We stand and we stare at the burning places, wondering if we have chosen the right team. And I think the disciples of Jesus must have felt something similar in the hours and days after Jesus' death. The gospel text for this Sunday describes them hiding behind locked doors for fear of the Judeans. Incidentally, every time you read "for fear of the Judeans," the Jewish nation was split between the north and Galilee and the Judeans in the south. And the gospel writers were very anti-Judeans, not so much Jews, because they were all Jews. But when they chose this radical carpenter, Jesus' disciples, when they chose this radical carpenter turned prophet to get behind only to see him crucified, they too must have wondered if they chose the right side. But when King quotes Hebrews, I hear him saying this: our faith is not meant to keep us from responding to the violence that is inflicted upon us. This violence, our faith is. We feel the pain and sadness, we feel the helplessness, we feel the loss, but we don't let our feelings make us shrink back from our values. We don't succumb to the fear that our opponents are stronger than we are. Instead, we believe, and I think there is salvation in what we believe. I believe that God is fervently present and involved, that what we stand for is true, that God is honored by our resistance to injustice, to submit to fear and helplessness. Acting in this belief passes all understanding. And then this reading that Derek did from 1 Peter this morning, I switched on to 1 Peter after I began thinking through this. 1 Peter unpacks this as the precious gift we have in faith. It is a faith that allows us to persist through struggle, while at the same time, the struggle tests us. And if we allow it, refines our faith, makes it stronger than before. Untested faith is not as faith that's had to stand beside a dying friend or to stare at a burning house without turning around and introducing yet more violence, more death, more hate, more loss into the world. Tested faith trains us to believe more in God's ability to give us new life than our enemy's ability to extinguish it. The Birmingham affiliate of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference produced a commitment card back in the 50s for those who would join the original civil rights effort to 10 different commitments. The first one was to meditate daily on the life and teachings of Jesus Christ. The second was to remember always, this is a quote, to remember always that the nonviolent movement seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. Tested faith, I believe, is what God will be looking for when it's all said and done. Not whether we won the fights we entered, but whether we could be found fighting faithfully for truth, for compassion. It's the word of God for the people of God.